G'day and welcome to A Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is CJ the DJ and I am your host for this week's Grad Chat. Of course, a show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and CFRC, so thank you very much to both of them. Now, if your mates miss the shows at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcast, or Stitcher. So no excuse not to hear what our awesome students and postdoctoral fellows are doing. Just a reminder as well, the clarity of the recording isn't quite as good as when we do it in the studio, so our apologies there. But we're all set to go with the best technology we have at home to be able to do this recording, and I'm sure you're going to really enjoy it. And one day we will be back in the studio, so hopefully not too far in the distant future. But today, I would like to introduce you to Isabel Sharp, who is doing a Master of Science in Epidemiology under the supervision of Dr. Colleen Davison. Welcome to Grad Chat, Isabel.
Hi, Colette. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
That's good. And it's interesting. I first met Isabel virtually, unfortunately, I guess, back in March for our three-minute thesis competition, which Isabel was a part of. How did you find doing that?
Well, I had a great time participating. I thought it was a lot of fun, although maybe not as exciting as doing it in person. But
correct.
I think it was a great opportunity to talk about my research in a really unique format. And it was really cool to hear all the other students' presentations as well and learn a bit about what their research is on.
I think that's the bit that I like too, because you get to hear so many other, like you said, disciplines. And normally you're probably so ingrained within your own department, you never always see what else is going on out there. So it's nice to be able to be a part of that and for them to get to know what you're doing too.
Yeah, for sure.
So I guess we should get on with it, because we can go back about 3 minutes to thesis a bit later. But what we really want to know is what you're doing right now. And your research topic is a global analysis of climate change, food insecurity, and mental health. So that is a huge topic, combining three major areas that has a lot of discussions, of course, going on right now. What made you choose such a big topic, or are they actually just a natural fit with each other?
Well, I chose this topic because for me, it was a really great way to merge some of my interests. I've always sort of been interested in nutrition and its impacts not only on physical health, what we might think of as obesity, diabetes, and things like that, but right. Also its impacts on our mental health. I'm also really passionate about climate change, and I think that it's one of the most important issues, if not the most important issue, that is currently being faced by humanity. And for a long time, I felt like I wanted to make a difference in this area and right. Didn't really know how. So I think that this research topic was a really great way for me to feel like I was making a small contribution to our understanding of the impacts of climate change. So overall, this thesis topic was sort of a great way for me to bring my interests together and also apply some of the epidemiology concepts that I've learned throughout my coursework.
Before we go on further with your work, why did you want to do epidemiology? I mean, I know it's a bit of a, not necessarily a buzzword, but a lot more people know what epidemiology is these days because of the pandemic. But what made you want to go into epidemiology?
I've always been interested in health and sort of helping people, but I'm not the sort of person who might go into a clinical field, doctor, nursing.
Right.
So I sort of felt like epidemiology was a good way to do that. And I've always been interested in research and sort of the logical, analytical part of things. So I found that epidemiology was sort of a great way to blend those interests.
It's a great program. It's a very good program. None of these sorts of things, not that I'm aware of, was around when I went to school. So I'm always very jealous at when I see some of the programs that we do. And I think, oh, God, that would have been really interesting to do. So you're very lucky there. Okay, so we should get onto your research, because I'm extremely interested to see how well you're connecting these three huge areas. So again, I know you gave a little bit of this in your introduction, but how are climate change, food insecurity, and mental health connected?
Yeah, so these three topics are actually very closely connected. Climate change is defined as any measurable change in the climate that lasts for an extended period of time, typically decades or longer. And as you probably know, climate change has a variety of different negative impacts on our environment, everything from biodiversity shifts to the increased frequency of heat waves. And due to all these negative environmental impacts, climate change actually represents one of the most serious threats to human health and well-being. So I guess changing gears a bit, food insecurity, or the lack of access to sufficient, safe, and nutritious food is right. quite closely tied to climate change. So for example, we see that climate change is causing a gradual temperature increase. And although an increase of a couple tenths of a degree might not seem like a lot, it can actually have really detrimental impacts on the productivity of crops in certain regions, which right. affects our ability to supply food. Climate change is also linked to an increase in the frequency and severity of different extreme weather events like floods or storms.
Right.
So these things can also harm our ability to access food as well. Climate change also has a serious negative effect on mental health. So for example, going back to the weather events, someone who has been through an extreme event like a hurricane might develop post-traumatic stress disorder or anxiety. Another mm-hmm. example is farmers who may have lost their crops might experience family stress, job stress, overall reduced well-being and stuff like that. And then lastly, there's a lot of evidence showing that food insecurity itself affects mental health in a negative way. So
right.
individuals might be feeling stressed, anxious due to their lack of access to adequate food, or they might feel ashamed about their food insecurity status in comparison to others. So sort of all three of these things are connected to one another and very closely linked. So mm-hmm. for my thesis, this is why I was interested in learning more about this very complex system.
It is complex. Yeah. I mean, because you can see connections between all of them. You know, there's importance as them individually, but then connecting as well. I mean, the food insecurity part right now, I mean, just think about what happened through the pandemic when people lost their jobs. Therefore, the income coming in was not as good. And we saw around the world, more and more people were going to food banks and things to get food to help support their families, but doesn't mean to say it's actually the most nutritious food either. So there's one of having access to food, but like you said, it's access to nutritional, good nutritional food. And these food banks are not doing anything, you know, they're not going out of their way to make it bad food. They have to accept what they can get and divvy out. But it's been a huge, the pandemic had a huge impact on that, didn't it?
Yeah. And food insecurity is a massive issue. Before the pandemic, about 2 billion people around the world were considered to be food insecure, and I'm sure that number right. has even grown.
Mm-hmm. Lots to think about there, and we can certainly talk more about that in a minute. So why did you choose, and sorry, maybe I should ask you to explain this different way. You're doing a Master of Science in Epidemiology, so you don't have the same sort of time frame as you would have a PhD to really get into it and collect your own data and stuff like that. So what kind of research method are you using in the short time that you have? Because it's only a 2-year program.
Yeah, and it's definitely a lot shorter than you might think after you complete the courses and sort of get your project up and running. It's pretty short. And I find myself wanting a bit more time. But so I ended up taking my project in two slightly different directions under sort of this broad topic. And this was sort of because I was interested in different aspects of it and I wanted to get feel for different types of research methods. So first I conducted a review to get a more in-depth understanding of the body of literature in this area of research. And I also conducted a quantitative analysis of a large data set where the data had already been collected for me to answer sort of a more specific question about climate change, food insecurity, and mental health.
So it's interesting. That's the usual thing as part of research is you do a literature review, but wow, how do you do a literature review on three very big topics? And did you find literature that were combining, whether it's, you know, climate change with food insecurity or climate change with mental health or food insecurity with mental health? Did you find those crossovers or were they all very much individual?
Well, what made me really interested in these three specific topics and how they work together was the fact that very, very little research has actually combined all three.
Right.
So I wasn't able to review the literature on all three because there's not very much of it. So I sort of picked one part of it that I was really interested in, which was the effects of climate change on mental health.
Right.
And specifically, I wanted to explore this among those who are living in low and middle income countries.
Right.
And this is because people living in these countries tend to be more vulnerable to climate change. And this is because of the geographic location of the countries. Most of them are in the southern areas of the world where they're having problems with their crop productivity and experiencing a lot of extreme weather events, and they tend to lack adequate infrastructure to maybe recover from some of these negative environmental impacts. And they also tend to lack adequate supports for mental health. So I was sort of interested in looking at this group that is already facing challenges and seeing how climate change is affecting mental health in this context.
And so the food insecurity was kind of one of those areas that wasn't looked at as much, but you can, I guess you can surmise some of that because of the kind of areas that you're looking at where they do have, like you said, have difficulties with their crops at times, or lots of floods. And so whatever was available is, what little was available is now gone.
Yeah, even though I wasn't directly exploring this topic in the review, it definitely came up. And I was finding that it did play an important role.
So this data set, the good thing about when you're doing the master's, if the data set is already there, it's a matter of being able to just analyze it rather than collect it. But where did you get this data set from? Because you said you wanted to look more of the, you know, the low to middle income sort of countries. So how did you get that data set?
Yeah, so the data set that I used is called the Gallup World Poll.
Okay.
And you may have heard of Gallup. They
Yes, they do a lot of polls all the time. Normally in political things.
Yeah. So this survey is a nationally representative survey, and it's conducted by Gallup every year in over 140 different countries around the world. And it asks questions on all kinds of topics, everything from health to politics, economics, social issues, lots of different questions. And it was a really great resource because it collects information from so many different countries. So I was able to look at what was going on in low and middle income countries and compare that to higher income countries. And yeah, through this data set, I was able to explore the relationship between climate change, food insecurity, and mental health all around the world, which was a really unique opportunity.
It's most researchers going, yay, don't have to go and do the collection.
Yeah.
It was interesting because you sort of said, you know, you were able to look at both the higher income countries versus the low to middle income. So you mentioned with the Gallup poll that there was lots of information there from both low to middle income and the more wealthier countries. So was it the information that you found on the low to middle income that was much more interesting for you to, for instance, get your teeth into as part of a research project? Or was it also maybe the fact that you could bring to light some information about the low to middle income countries where the rest of us should, you know, the more wealthier countries should be paying a bit more attention to?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned before, these countries are particularly susceptible to climate change, lack adequate supports for mental health. These are the countries where food insecurity is primarily taking place. Mm-hmm. And generally the research, not in all cases, but generally the research literature focuses on high income countries. And I found exploring all these relationships, climate change, mental health, climate change, food insecurity, mental health, definitely the high income countries were sort of dominant in the literature. So I sort of wanted to bring out and see, are we seeing a different effect in low and middle income countries, or is it the same? And yeah, sort of getting at how that works.
So when was this data set done? I know you say the Gallup World Poll do us every year. I mean, the pandemic has probably mucked up all research data sets, because it's a very different year that the whole world has had it, because I mean the pandemic affected everybody, not just one group. So your data set, was that before the pandemic, or was it smack in the middle of it?
Well, I was going to grab my data from the Gallup World Poll, I think at the beginning of 2020, right when the pandemic was starting. So luckily, all of the previous years were still available to me, so I was able to pick an earlier year, even though the current year wasn't ready. So I lucked out on that, but I know a lot of projects have been affected.
Yeah, I was wondering though, if you've had the data set from before, what that data set now would look like, you know, halfway through the pandemic, and once we get through the other side, how long it may take to get back to, I don't think we're ever back to the same. So, I mean, what would that effect be moving forward? So I guess that might be a PhD project for you. Not one making you say do the PhD next at all. So what are the research and policy implications of your thesis research?
Well, I think that this project sort of allowed me to explore the relationship between climate change, food insecurity, and mental health through a global data set. And as I mentioned earlier, there are not a lot of studies who have actually done this. Uh-huh. So my project was sort of novel in this respect. And we did find support that these three ideas are connected, but I think that my research comes with important limitations to consider. We were limited by our use of this data set. We could only do so much, and we could only look at what they had already measured. So I think that the biggest takeaway for me was that this is sort of a step in the right direction and opens up the opportunity for more research on this topic and improvement of methods over time.
Right.
And I think that in terms of policy, I definitely was able to produce more concrete findings with the review portion of my project. So bringing together all of the different literature on climate change and mental health in low and middle income countries. And overall, the findings there supported the need to consider mental health as a part of climate change policies and different interventions in these countries. And I think that a number of different solutions would be useful for improving mental health within the context of climate change. So things like increased surveillance and monitoring of mental health, improved access and funding, increased training for specialized providers and emergency responders in some of those disaster situations like floods or storms that we talked about. So I think that obviously there are still some gaps in the research, but these are the sort of things we should be considering going forward. And not a lot of people know that climate change affects your mental health too. So I think just sort of bringing the awareness about that is also important.
It's interesting when you're talking about policies for these, for instance, these individual countries, but as we all know, sometimes it's more than just the individual country that has to make change. I mean, climate change is a prime example, is that not, it's no good just one country trying to do the right thing. We need everybody to try and do the right thing. So when it comes to policies and things, is this something that you would like to bring forward to a place like the United Nations or some of those global organizations to say, look, here's the data. You know, this is what's happening at the local level. But some of that, we can ask the local level to do this, this, and this. But at the end of the day, unless everyone does this, this, and this, it's not going to have much effect. So is that kind of some of the things that you're looking at as well, whether it can go further and you just need to be able to provide more information? Because you said also that the data set was limited in the kind of information they collected. So I guess the next question after that too is, what other information would you want to collect?
Yeah, well, it can. I think that the quality of the research still needs to be improved a bit, especially in the mental health sphere, because the physical health impacts of climate change are really well known and we have better evidence to support those. There's a lot of limitations to the current research. For example, my study, as well as many other studies in this sort of area, use a cross-sectional design, which means that they collected information on all of the things they were measuring at once. So for example, if they're asking someone, did you experience flood event? And did you have symptoms of anxiety? And they're asking them at once, and we get answers to both those questions, but it can be hard to tell sometimes whether the person had anxiety symptoms before they experienced the flood event.
Right.
So in that case, it's not actually answering the question that we want to answer. So, and it can be very challenging in these situations. You don't know when a flood event is coming. So it can be challenging to collect this kind of information. And
Right.
Yeah.
So what about, because you're sort of honing in on the mental health side of things, is that, if you can sort of explain the mental health issues, is that a sort of a roundabout way that we can get people to start thinking about climate change, or a roundabout way and getting to think, well, you know, some of these issues have been caused either because of climate change or because they're food insecure. So, you know, we can fix mental health if we can fix these two things.
Yeah, I think it's a very complex puzzle. And as we talked about, all three of these things are connected in all sorts of different ways. And this is something my project has just sort of begun to try and understand, how they are actually connected. And
right.
I think that climate change is obviously a very large issue. It's going to take a long time to solve. So I think at least for the present, looking at mental health problems in the context of climate change and being able to treat them, knowing that climate change may be contributing,
right,
is an important step.
Have you seen in the data that you've collected, is there a difference between those people who live in rural areas versus city or metropolitan areas, urban areas? Is that shown at all, or was maybe that data wasn't collected?
You're testing my memory.
That's what it's all about. I mean, it sounds like, I mean, you had a huge data set to actually go through.
We did collect, that data was collected and we did look at it. I don't think the difference was very large, which was sort of interesting. I think that both rural and urban settings have their own issues when it comes to things like food insecurity and mental health, and they both sort of have a different context. So maybe that's one of the reasons why the differences weren't.
Right. I'm just wondering too, I mean, if we can knock off one of those three, like the food insecurity, for instance, we know around the world there's a surplus of food. It's just not getting to the people who need it. Okay, so if we could rally the troops to get that stored food to those that need it, assuming it's good nutritional food too, then if we could knock off one of them, maybe that will help the other two a little bit. Or is that being totally naive to think that's ever going to happen?
Well, one can be optimistic. I think that this would help, and obviously improving food situations all around the world will help not only with mental health, but also the physical health aspect. So I think that it would be a great thing if that could happen. But yeah, it's an interesting thing to think about, given how all of these things are connected.
Right, yeah. And it's interesting too, because until I saw your topic, and, you know, both in the 3-minute thesis and again today, I hadn't really thought about that connection, but it's so true how one can trigger another or have an effect on another. So I really appreciate you bringing that to the forefront for us all to ponder over, as they say. So what are the next steps for you? Or is that a big question too? I mean, it's kind of like, it's collect, you know, I just got to get through my degree.
Well, I'm looking forward to completing my degree, as well as sort of continuing this area of research. I'm looking into the specific effects of climate change on the mental health of children.
Okay.
And seeing if that's different, what literature is available in this area. And yeah, so that's sort of where I'm going next in the short term.
Well, that'd be good. Again, though, it's going to be difficult to choose what region of the world do you look at, because there's so many different regions, and particularly regions that children have been affected by everything. So, but we all want to make a better world for the young ones coming up. Otherwise, there's not going to be much fun for them, is it? So I think that's great that you're going to be doing that. A lot of work. Would that, again, be an opportunity for you to use already the data sets that are there, or do you want to actually go out and do your own data collection?
I think that for now I'm going to be reviewing the literature and seeing what is out there on this topic already,
right,
and then probably going from there, because I know doing data collection would be a huge undertaking, so I'm going to start with the review.
But it could make you feel, I don't know about you, but I like to do things. I mean, there's one thing you can read and you can get excited about the reading and stuff like that, but sometimes it's just actually observing it for yourself, even in a short term, can give you, I don't know, a different sort of push to want to make a difference. Not saying that you're not doing that right now, because you are, because someone has to analyze all that. There's no point collecting data if it's not analyzed. So you're having an important, you know, an impact right now. But whether observing things for yourself, even in the short term, whether that would make a difference, or difference in your thinking even a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Potentially PhD work.
See, I got that in there, didn't I? Well, Isabel, it has been great talking to you. Like I said, fascinating topic that you've got, combining the three, and it really has clearly shown us, you've shown us how they are connected. And very, very connected, not just a little bit. They're really connected. So thank you very much for that. And we certainly wish you the best of luck in finishing that up. And hopefully someday we'll see you back on campus, which won't be that far away, I don't think. But best of luck with the rest of it, and keep in contact, and well done.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was great.
See, it wasn't that bad, was it? I say that to the students every week, and they normally sigh a big sigh of relief after, so they know they've got through it, which is great. So that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat sadly comes to an end. Don't forget, you can download this show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcasts, or Stitcher. Just type in Grad Chat. Until next week, this is CJ the DJ signing off with a big hooray!
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples. The CFRC Podcast Network at podcast.cfrc.ca is brought to you by the generous support of the Queen's University Faculty of Engineering and Applied Sciences.